Lesson 8. Text A. My personal manager. Margaret Gough Clark. Pre-class work. 1.
Read the text once for the main idea. Do not refer to the notes, dictionaries, or the glossary yet.
I'm getting a great idea, Carlos said to me. We were standing on the steps outside Gailton High. It was one of those golden days in late October. Why not let me be your manager? I can promise you'll soon be cool, pretty, and popular. You sound like a soap commercial, I said. It's funny you should say that. It is pretty close to my aim in life. I'm going to be a promotion man. I may be short, but I can promote big things. Like me. Which is how little Carlos Herrera took me and turned me into, well... The first time I saw Carlos, I would never have believed he was going to change my life. I had my arms full of books, and I was tearing into the classroom when I ran into something solid. It was Carlos. He looked up at me. "My, you're tall," he said. Of course, the class began to laugh. Angry, I walked to my seat without a word. I glanced back to see if Reed Harrington was laughing with the rest. That would be the last straw. But Reed was studying chemistry and did not seem to be aware of anything else. I didn't know why I considered Reed my friend, maybe just because he was a good 2 inches taller than I. Anyway, every time I blew out my birthday candles and made a wish, it was for a date with Reed Harrington. I came back to Earth to see the cocky newcomer standing in front of Mr. McCarthy's desk. He was telling him that his name was Carlos Herrera, and that he'd moved to Gallanton from New York. "Take that seat," Mr. McCarthy told Carlos, pointing to the only empty one in the back of the room. Carlos grinned. "But I need a couple of dictionaries." Again the class laughed, but now they were laughing with Carlos, not at him. He had been here only 10 minutes, and he already had them on his side. The bell rang for classes. As I stood up to go, I saw Carlos coming toward me. "I'm sorry I embarrassed you," he said. I looked straight ahead over the top of his black hair. "That's all right." "I ought to know better." He was still blocking my way. "What's your name?" "Karen Forbes." "You've probably heard me say, I'm Carlos Herrera." He held out his hand. Unwillingly, I shook hands with him. He looked up at me seriously with his brown eyes. "I don't see why you're so touchy." I brushed by him and said sharply, "You wouldn't understand." He followed me a few steps. "I'm just the one who should, Karen," he said. "You and I have a lot in common." It was the school elections that made me think of Carlos again. They were held the last of October. Reed Harrington was voted president and Carlos vice president. How come? I kept asking myself. How come this shrimp, who's only been in town for a little over a month, gets to be so popular? So, on that perfect October morning, I stopped Carlos and said, point blank, "It doesn't seem to bother you, being short, I mean." He looked up at me. "Of course I mind being short. I get a stiff neck every day from looking up at people like you." "I might have known I couldn't get a sensible answer from you." I started up the steps. "Hey, don't go away, please." I stopped. Carlos was through kidding. "Sure, it bothers me, being knee-high to a flea, but there isn't anything I can do about it. When I realized I was going to have to spend my life in this undersized skin, I just decided to make the best of it and concentrate on being myself. You seem to get along great, I admitted. But what about me? No boy wants to date a girl taller than he is. The trouble with you is you're afraid to be yourself. You're smart, and you could be pretty. In fact, you might be more than pretty. I felt myself turning red. I'm getting a great idea, said Carlos. And right then, he suggested being my manager. I wasn't sure. Well, look, he almost fell off the steps in his eagerness. Prize fighters have managers and movie stars. Besides, what have you got to lose? I shrugged. Okay. Soon after that, he had my new life planned. I was to let my hair grow, wear a fitted sweater and neat skirt, and lift my head and say hi to everyone. I was to volunteer to work on the school paper and go out for dramatics. Dramatics? I protested. I can't act. And anyway, they don't have parts for giants. You won't be alone, he told me. I, too, am joining the dramatics club. 4 months went by. 4 months of being almost a puppet with Carlos pulling the strings. Then one day, he told me about his latest brainwave. It seemed my acting career was about to burst into flower with the lead part in a play Carlos had dug up. It was about a 6-foot model who falls in love with a jockey. You, I suppose, are the jockey, I said. He grinned. No way, I said. That story has been done so many times it has lost its humour. The coach would never let us put on a play like that. That's where you're wrong, Karen, said Carlos. It's all arranged, and that plot is still funny. But I don't want to be funny, I groaned. Carlos gave me a pleading look. Karen, I've never asked you for a thing for myself, have I? He hadn't. And now I want you to do this for me. I want to play that jockey, and we can't do this play without you in it. What could I do? He had given hours, months to me. I knew it was the most foolish move of my life, but I said yes. I could not put my heart into that play. It was pure nonsense from beginning to end. The tall model and the jockey were in every foolish situation ever invented. The night of the play, I felt lowest of all. I didn't see how I could go out on that stage and make a laughing stock of myself right in front of my parents and Reed Harrington. I can't do it, I groaned to Carlos. He reached up and patted me on the back. Stage fright. All the best actors have it. You'll be fine. I could see he could hardly wait for the curtains to open, his brown eyes shining with eagerness. I had to go through with it for him. I'm with you, I said, to the end. Carlos took my hand in both of his. We'll celebrate after the play. Okay, Karen. I managed to smile down at him. It's a date. The band stopped playing and the curtains opened. Carlos as the jockey and I, the model, were seated at a table. From our talk, the audience could tell we were falling in love. There was no comedy yet. Then, as we stood up, the awful difference in our sizes became clear. There was a chuckle all over the auditorium. Carlos wanted to kiss me goodbye, but he couldn't reach my face. I bent over, and he stood on tiptoe to give me a peck on the chin. A shout of laughter burst from hundreds of throats. I walked off the stage with an exaggerated model's walk. More laughs. From then on, I let loose and acted for all I was worth. Carlos was better than ever, and so were the rest of the cast. Again and again, we had to hold up our lines while the people laughed. As the curtains closed, Carlos threw his arms round my waist. "You were terrific," he said. "Bend over, and I'll give you a kiss." The house lights went up, and people began pouring backstage to congratulate us. Mother and Dad were flushed and happy-looking. "I'm proud of you, dear," Mother said. Mobs of my friends crowded around, but I was looking for one person who would tower above the others. At last he came. "You're a real comedian," he said, taking my hand and looking me straight in the eyes. Then he cleared his throat. "I was wondering, that is, if you don't have something else planned, would you go out with me for something to eat?" Here it was, at last, my chance. But somehow, now that I had the chance, I knew there was something more important than going out with Reed. "Thank you," I said, smiling at him. "Some other time I'd love to, but tonight I have a date with Carlos." Glossary. Audience. Auditorium. Backstage. Bother. Career. Cast. Chin. Coach. Cocky. Comedian. Comedy. Commercial. Concentrate. Congratulate. Curtain. Dramatics. Eagerness. Embarrass. Exaggerated. Flee. Flushed. Giant. Groan. Hey. Humor. Invent. Jockey. Knee. Newcomer. Nonsense. Peck. Pleading. Plot. Promote. Promotion. Puppet. Sensible. Sharply. Shrimp. Smart. Stiff. Terrific. Tiptoe. Touchy. Undersized. Vice President. Volunteer. Text B. And if elected, Lael J. Little. I'm not one of the in crowd at Haskell High School. I'm sort of on the outside of things. So I was surprised when Dagny Draperman asked to have lunch with me one day. Dagny is in the in crowd. She's in everything. "Susie," Dagny said, after we had found a table, "as you know, I'll be running for president of the student organization in the upcoming election. I'd like you to work on my campaign. Would you like that?" "Would I like that? Would I like to find a $1,000 bill? "Yes or no?" asked Dagny. "Do fish swim?" I said. "Do birds fly?" I say things like that when I'm nervous. "I guess that means yes," said Dagny. "Great. I'm going to have the best campaign Haskell High has ever seen. I'd like you to think of some campaign slogans for my posters. You do those things so well." You can count on me, I said, pleased. I'll have a meeting at noon tomorrow with the members of my committee, said Dagny. The rules say we only have 2 weeks to campaign, so we have to move quickly. Just then, Eugene Beckerman stopped by at our table. He smiled at us in that sweet, shy way he has that's so nice. I've been, you know, looking for you, Dagny, he said. I wanted to, you know, congratulate you about your, you know, running for president. Eugene is one of the smartest kids in the school. He knows a lot about science, but when he talks, you're so busy counting the you knows that you lose track of what he's saying. Dagny looked back at Eugene. Thanks, she said. I hear you'll be running for president too, so good luck, you know. I thought to myself that she didn't have to add that you know. Eugene blushed. Thanks, he said. Well, I guess I'll, you know, be seeing you. I watched him leave. I didn't know he was running for president. If I had, maybe I wouldn't have agreed to help Dagny. Eugene lives across the street from me, and we've been friends forever. But this was my big chance to break into the in-group. I didn't think Eugene could possibly win anyway, so I might as well be on the winning side. He's got Mad Mel to run his campaign, Dagny said. Mad Mel, I groaned. Wow! You're as smart as Mad Mel, Dagny said to me. Don't worry about it. Have some ideas ready for the meeting, will you? I was pleased that Dagny had confidence in my abilities, but I didn't want to hurt Eugene. Still, he had Mad Mel on his side. Mad Mel really knows how to get attention. I'd really have to be sharp. I didn't sleep much that night. I was too busy thinking up ideas. But I felt it was worth it when I went to the meeting. I found out who else was on the committee. There was Tanya, Rod and Courtney, three of the most popular kids in the school. I expected them to ask me what I was doing there. But they all smiled and said, Hi, Susie, welcome aboard. Dagny said the first thing to do was think about what her campaign ought to focus on. There was a lot of talk about whether she should promise to provide better food in the cafeteria. Dagny finally decided to push for a glass cabinet to show off the school trophies. I didn't want to speak up in that crowd, but I did. I said, I think the food might be more important. Eugene will probably use it if you don't. Courtney turned to me. You don't think Eugene could win, she said. Do you? Everyone stared at me. Did I? Does rain fall up, I said. Is the moon made of green cheese? I guess that means no, said Dagny. Then I presented my poster ideas. I had made some rough sketches. One poster showed someone sewing a piece of cloth. The cloth had the words, Class President, on it. Under the drawing, I wrote in large letters, Dagny has it all sewed up. There was a bunch of others like that. Good work, Susie, said Dagny. I love them. Get those posters up tomorrow. We'll murder Eugene, said Tanya. That made me feel bad. As I walked home, I told myself that Mel would think of something even better for Eugene. I was nearly home when I met Eugene. Hi, Susie, Eugene said. I heard that, you know, you're going to be working on Dagny's campaign. You know, I wanted you to help me with mine. I wish I had known, I said. I meant it. But you've got Mel. Eugene looked down at his feet. Then he said, Mel, talk to me into running. I think it's, you know, a kind of game for him. I hoped Mad Mel wasn't setting Eugene up for a fall. But it wasn't any of my business. I'd better let you go, I said. Oh, yeah, said Eugene. I was just, you know, going over to Mel's house to get started on my, you know, campaign. I spent most of that night making posters. The next morning, I hung them up around the school. They really did look good. I figured we'd won the first round. But that was before Mad Mel put up the posters he and Eugene had made. Right in the main lobby, Mel had hung a brightly coloured poster. It showed a pirate's chest filled with gems. The words underneath the poster said, "Follow the footsteps, find the treasure." Painted footsteps led to four other posters. Each one showed a chest a little more open than the one before. In the fifth poster, the chest was wide open. It showed Eugene's picture. Everyone loved the treasure hunt, but Dagny was still pleased with my efforts. Everything else was going smoothly, too. Tanya had written a story on Dagny for the next issue of the school newspaper, and Rod had written a great speech for her to give at the elections assembly. Dagny called a meeting to go over things. "You know," Rod said, "I'm sure that will really, you know, shine at the assembly." Everyone laughed. I felt sorry for Eugene, but I told myself it wasn't our fault that he had that, you know, problem. Dagny turned to me. "Susie," she said, "I need a song for the campaign." It wasn't easy, but I did it. Courtney and I got some kids together. We taught them the song and a dance. As I had guessed, Eugene made improving the cafeteria food his main issue. Even so, as we got nearer to the elections assembly, Dagny seemed to be the favourite. Each of the candidates was going to speak at the assembly. That might decide who would win. The day before the assembly, I ran into Eugene. He looked troubled. "You know, Susie," he said, "I'm not sure I should have gotten into this. All this stuff Mad Mel is doing really has, you know, nothing to do with what kind of president I'd make." Those were the fewest you knows I had heard Eugene use in a speech that long. "I know, Eugene," I said, "but it's all part of a campaign." "But why does it have to, you know, be that way?" I couldn't answer him. I didn't think he would have to worry about it for long, because after Dagny's speech, he might as well drop out of the race. But the elections assembly went well. The candidates for president were the last ones to speak. Our song and dance number was a hit. Then Dagny gave a smashing speech. When it was Eugene's turn, he walked onto the stage and sat down. Then Mad Mel came up. He was pulling a clothing store dummy or mannequin dressed in a suit and tie and on roller skates. "This is Mr. Mannykin," Mad Mel announced. "He will speak for our candidate, Eugene Beckman. Eugene, right now, is busy working on a plan to sell pizzas. With the money we make, we can buy food, we can eat." That brought lots of laughter. Mad Mel looked at the mannequin. "Isn't that right, Manny?" asked Mel. "Sorry, Manny. I know it's hard to talk when you're thinking about that awful cafeteria food." Mel waited for the clapping to stop. Then he said, "Now, Manny, I know you want to say a few words about our candidate, Eugene Beckman. You can go ahead now." Mel looked out at the audience. "Isn't that touching?" he said. "Manny thinks Eugene's so great that he's all choked up. He can't speak." As Mel spoke, everyone cheered. At our meeting that afternoon, Dagny was furious. "Of all the cheap tricks," she said, "Mel brought in that dummy so that Eugene wouldn't have to speak." "Hey," Rod said, "that gives me an idea. Let's put up a poster that says, 'Only a dummy would vote for, you know, Eugene.'" Everyone roared with laughter, except me. "No," I said, "that's low, that's really low. Susie, dear, said Dagny, we would be foolish not to take advantage of this opportunity. I looked at Dagny and the others. Then I said, I don't think I can serve on this committee any more. Dagny smiled. All right, she said. I think I've already won the election anyway. So I was out. But to my surprise, I didn't care. As I left, I heard Rod say, Let's challenge the dummy to a debate. They must have done that right away, because when I stopped by Eugene's house early that evening, he had already heard about it. They want a, you know, debate, Eugene said unhappily. Mad Mel says we should, you know, do it, Eugene sighed. He'll do all the, you know, talking with the dummy. Eugene, I said, listen, you know you've got this problem. Why don't we work on it? So you can do your own talking. Do you, you know, think I could? Let's try, I said. We did. Eugene and I spent the whole weekend working. He practiced speaking without saying, you know. But it was hard. The debate was very important. Each candidate was given one final chance to state his or her goals. Dagny was first. She ended with, And if you elect me, I will see to it that Haskell High's trophies are put in a case for all to see. Then it was Eugene's turn. Mel stood up. He headed toward the mic. He was dragging the mannequin. Suddenly, I sensed trouble. Dagny and her friends were smiling slyly at each other. Mel didn't notice. He looked so pleased with himself. I knew then that Eugene was right. This was just a big game to Mel. Mel was about to speak. But then the dummy itself began speaking. Someone must have planted a speaker somewhere in its clothing. They must have taped Eugene's voice, because all you could hear was Eugene's voice coming from the dummy, saying over and over, And if I'm elected, you know, you know, you know. The audience broke up with laughter. Eugene looked shocked. Shaken, he smiled and walked up to the microphone. I guess it's time for the real dummy to speak, he said. You must have thought I'd lost my voice. Well, now you know where it is. He pointed at the mannequin, and everyone laughed. Eugene straightened his shoulders. Then he said, In a campaign, it's easy to see only the tricks and lose sight of the real issues. I'm not sure what the real issues are, but I think they should address what is best for those of us here at Haskell. Eugene paused. Then he said, I don't know if I'd make a good president. I've never been one before. But I can promise you that if elected, I'll, you know, do my very best. He smiled again and sat down. Only one, you know, in the whole speech. There was a lot of cheering then. Nobody had ever made a speech like that before, and the kids loved it. Eugene spotted me in the crowd. He said, Thanks, Susie. We walked home together after school that afternoon. If I'm elected, he said, I'm really going to, you know, need you around next year. We stopped, and he smiled at me. Suddenly, I forgot that I had known him all my life. It was as if I was seeing him for the first time. I think we'll be seeing a lot of one another from now on, Susie, he said softly. Is that all right with you? Was that all right with me? Do birds fly, I said. Is the sky blue? When I said that, Eugene looked at me. Susie, he said, you've got this, you know, problem. Why don't we work on it?